Welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Last weekend, we saw a legend prevail over an up-and-coming contender as Alistair Overeem defeated Augusto Sakai in the main event at the UFC Apex. I'm your host, Jake Jones, and my co-host this week, he is back. The man is back in town. It's our guy, Sean Gilley. How you doing, man?
I'm going to be back. Then on the weekend, them fights were unbelievable. Come on,
weren't
man. Alistair Overeem, 40 years old, and he's still delivering.
Mate, weren't they just... They were absolutely incredible. I mean, let's start a recapping stage. As you've just said, you thought that was an amazing card. So did I. I really liked last weekend's card. I thought, overall, there were some fantastic fights on display, and there was just some incredible standout performances from the fighters on the card. So, as it seems a lot lately, once more, I bloody called the fights wrong again. I'm getting my name for doing that now. I had Imadiyev to beat Pereira, and I had Menafield to beat OSP. However, having said this, I'm absolutely over the moon by both these guys' victories, and I thought both these guys earned my respect again as a fan of the sport. I felt like OSP had lost his place a little bit in the UFC, and I felt like Pereira hadn't really earned his place. Me and Liam spoke about it last week, but it felt like OSP was just a bit of a journeyman at the moment, and whenever he fought, I would be game to watch it, and then he kind of would just sap it away from me. However, this weekend I felt like OSP was back at his best, and the same goes for Michel Pereira. We got to see everything on display from that guy, and he looked strong, he looked quick, and he looked much more conditioned than he did in the past. So let's talk about that fight. What were your thoughts between Pereira and Imadiyev?
Pereira 100% dominated. you can't say anything else, can you? Like, fair enough, I don't think there was a tap at the end, but really, is anyone going to judge that after that performance of domination?
Well, exactly. And that, you summed it up perfectly there. So I actually had Imadiyev to win this fight prior to the event. Prior to him joining the UFC, he was undefeated at 8-0. So I felt there was a big prospect in this guy. However, in the UFC, he's now gone 0-3. I felt this was his time to shine. Coming in against a guy who tends to waste a lot of his energy before the fight, you'd be thinking, yeah, let him have his time showboating, doing what he does, and then when he's knackered, I'm going to really lay it on him. Don't get me wrong, when you fight a guy like Pereira, you're always worried because of the dangerous power that he possesses, but at 170 pounds, you can try and rely on him knackering himself out with his showboating, with his backflips, and then implementing a solid ground game or even just grappling game where you can just wrestle him and get the unanimous decision victory. However, this was not the case at all, was it?
No,
mate, Pereira looked bloody brilliant Saturday night. He threw a few wild shots, but he threw them really effectively. Now, I spoke about this a lot last week, that I don't like the wild shots he throws, but I have to admit, that last weekend I was loving them. He threw a few showtime kicks, which tended to connect, but then also a lot of the time he's flying knees, that's the way to say it. He's throwing a lot of flying knees there, and they may not have landed flush, but they definitely gave Imadiyev something to think about, and that's what I liked from Michel in this fight. He looked quick, he looked powerful, yeah. He was composed, but he was fluid as well. It was just a bit like how MVP Michael Venom Page performs in Bellator. Yeah. He looks like he's having a joke in there, but 99% of the time, he's the far superior fighter, and he was just able to control the fight. So, I think we have two big talking points about the fight. You've already shone on it, but number one, was it a tap?
No, it wasn't a tap for me. Like, I think he was trying to feint the hands, like Daniel Cormier was saying. That was not a tap for me.
Well,
can we really see anything after that? All that performance, does it really count?
Well, exactly. So, I pretty much can sum it up in the same way. No, for me, it was not a tap. Chris Tyone got this wrong. Pereira took his back and he wraps the choke in. However, I'd argue that it wasn't even deep enough, and overall there just wasn't a tap. I think Imadiyev tried to fight the hands, but don't get me wrong, he wasn't doing it as successfully as you see other fighters do. He didn't look like he was doing it too well. He looked a little bit uncomfortable there, but I don't really know why Tony called it there, because there wasn't a tap. Don't get me wrong, it changed nothing. Pereira was winning that 30-27 as a minimum. However, the only issue is that Imadiyev will now take his third straight loss as a finish as well. Which moves me on to my second talking point. What is next? For me, Imadaev is likely going to be cut from the UFC from the promotion now. As I said, that's three losses in a row since joining them. And although, yes, he's lost all three, he really suffered a heavy loss in that last fight there. That was domination from Pereira. It wasn't like a guy who... It wasn't like he dominated the fight in one department, say grappling, and then just got clipped. Pereira looked a class above Imadaev, and I don't really know what he offers the UFC anymore. And as I said, three straight losses since joining them. I don't really know if they're going to want to invest much more. Unless they give him a four-fight contract, I think that might be Imadaev's time over there. But for Michelle, I know that he called for the BMF belt. And to be honest, mate, I can't think of anything worse than seeing
exactly,
that fight.
Yeah, see, I was thinking that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I know Michelle's entertaining, but Masvidal is the king of KOs at the moment, and he is a different breed to Pereira. It's not that I don't think Michelle could cause problems, and it's not that I don't think he could potentially win with a shock knockout. However, he doesn't deserve that fight, and the fight just shouldn't be made. What's your thoughts on what he should have next, but also on his call-out?
The call out of Masvidal's definitely not the right path for Pereira. Like, don't get me wrong, Pereira looks like so big for that division. But to be honest, I'm not really sure what Pereira is. Like you were saying, by OSP, he's like a journeyman, so I'm not really sure at the minute.
Yeah, well, let me chuck something out there. I'd be interested to see if he gets a top 15 guy next, or another fight I'd love to see. Imagine Pereira versus Mike Perry. Now, same weight division, that's a co-main event right there between two fantastic KO artists who literally leave everything in there. They're both on the brink of the top 15, and they both bring eyes to the sport for their entertaining styles. So give us that fight. Do you know what I mean? It makes sense for both fighters. It's definitely co-main, even maybe even main event worthy, or at least on the main card for a pay-per-view card. Do you know what I mean? It's a fight that everyone's going to tune into. It's a fight that both fighters are going to get paid some good dollar for. So let's do that instead. As I said, he's nowhere near the BMF title yet.
Yeah.
However, a guy like Mike Perry, if you take him out, you then get into your top 15, and then you then start asking for these bigger top 10, top 5 fights. Let's see where that goes. But let's move on to the co-main event. Hats off to one of the longest serving guys, Ovince St. Preux. What
Jesus.
A beast. What do you think?
Like, I think everyone was like, oh, on through choke. He's got something by the on through choke. But no, he absolutely knocks Minifield out. And I was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Face Mate. To the canvas. I was like, wow.
You put it perfectly. Face to the canvas. So, OSP handed Alonzo Minifield his second loss of his pro career and his first KO loss. Now, what a punch that was. Although I called this fight to go the other way, I wasn't shocked about the result at all. I was shocked and surprised by the KO, but that was because if that happened to absolutely anybody, then you were standing up on your feet screaming at the TV. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just perfect. And I thought that Menefield was going to have to really go for it in there and pressure OSP and push for the finish. And I think he had to do that because he didn't have enough time to adapt between his last fight with Devin Clark. So he came in there with the same game plan that he always goes in there with and that we've seen in the past, swing heavy and go for the KO.
Yeah.
Now, especially against a guy like OSP, who has been KO'd hard before, Menefield would have been banking on landing that punch to finish it. And we just saw OSP's experience and his skill as a counter-striker prevailing here. He was patient and waited for that opportune moment when Menefield overextended, rushed in, and then was clipped. Oh. And when I say clipped, what a left hand that was. Even OSP stood there for a second like, hang on, he's done. He's finished. Like, it was brilliant. And it was tough to see Menefield turn around almost in shock, as if like, what just happened to me? But that's what happens in these bigger weight classes. You get caught with one clean shot, you are going out. Overall, I was really impressed with the finish, and I was really happy to see OSP back with a bang. He looked good and he gets a win over a very promising guy. And I mean, as for what's next, I couldn't really say for either guy. They probably aren't looking for top 15 guys just yet. But OSP would likely get a decent name, like an up-and-coming fighter again, or a veteran of the sport. And then Menefield would probably take some time to recoup himself here, readjust his game a bit. He's 9-2. There's no doubt that he's talented, but I'm not sure if he's... I would argue that he might not be UFC caliber yet. And that's not saying that he's not at the lower level of UFC, but he can't, like I said, getting knocked out by a guy like OSP there, it just shows there's levels to this game. Yeah. You can't rely on being just a heavy hitter. And unfortunately, he got a bit caught out here. But as I said, I'm still looking forward to him come back. He's still talented. And we'll just have to see what the future holds for both of these guys. But let's talk about the main event of the evening. A 5-round brawl between two of the top 10 UFC heavyweights. I mean, the first thing to note, Alistair Overeem might just be back. Yeah, his final run for the title may just be there. He's 4-1 in his last five, and he would arguably have been 5-0 if Rozenstruik hadn't have landed that last second punch. I think a lot of people had Overeem up against the cards against Rozenstruik. So he's still proving that he can cut it at this top level, and he continued to do so on Saturday night. He beat Sakai all in all by just utilising his experience and his superior grappling. Don't get me wrong, Sakai had some great moments early on where he looked like he might get the finish over him. He kept backing Overeem up, and he landed a couple of times, a 10 to 20 punch combination where all Overeem could do was keep his guard up and defend. However, one big thing to note as well, Overeem was smart here. He kept on his feet. And in those times where guys barraging you with punches and giving you no space to breathe, it is hard because you just want to curl up and cover yourself. Overeem didn't, which is why the fight was never stopped. He defended intelligently, and I know that sounds odd to say because, yes, he didn't necessarily throw any strikes, he just covered up. But as I said, if Overeem had dropped there or tried to change levels, then potentially the referee would have called it off there. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? If you get yourself in a worse position, you might just have to sometimes take them punches to then knock the opponent out, get your space between him, and then, as I said, then start teeing off. And one of the main talking points was the single leg swoop that Overeem was able to do. Yeah, that managed to just get Sakai down, three or four times? He would get Sakai up against the cage in the later rounds and then literally twist and drag the big old boy to the mat.
This is a kickboxer we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a man who made his name literally, I don't know, God knows how many fights he's had in kickboxing, but as you said, a kickboxer, but once more, a guy who's just so experienced in the sport. And from there, Overeem was able to do an Overeem special, land some top level ground and pound. I mean, what a finish. It was amazing. In the round before, I think in the fourth round, he managed to hurt Sakai and cut him up a lot with some good ground and pound. However, it was in the opening of the fifth round where he was able to cement his game and land some crushing punches and elbows. Man, they were sickening. Literally, there were those elbows which were just such clean contact where you can see Sakai's head literally bounce back a bit, bounce off the canvas, and the ref was totally right to stop it there. It was overall such a good performance from Alistair, and for once, I bloody called it. Liam mentioned last week that Overeem has only been past the third round twice in his career, and he felt that if Sakai could get into the fourth round, then he would get the win. Now, I had to disagree because Sakai's never really looked that much of a dangerous guy for me. Don't get me wrong, I can imagine he's a bit of a beast. Mm-hmm. But just in the UFC fights that I've seen him in, I felt like he's let me down a little bit. So I felt that Overeem had this fight in the bag, and he definitely got the job done. Once more, though, I couldn't call who was next for him.
Derek Lewis.
Well, the thing is, that might be the best shout. I mean, I don't think they'll want to rebook him Rozenstruik, although that seems probably most likely because Rozenstruik isn't matched up yet. Could you see Overeem Rozenstruik too? I could see it happening. But I don't know if Overeem wants that fight. And I don't really see them giving him someone like Volkov, because Volkov's ranked lower than him, I think, by one space. But Volkov's coming off a loss. So I don't really see him getting the fight with Ngannou either, because that first fight didn't end well. I can't see a title shot yet. And then Blades and Lewis are wrapped up together. So I don't really know where he goes. I'd like to know what fans' thoughts are on it, but you've just put out a good shout there. Derek Lewis. I mean, if Lewis beats Blades, I think you could argue maybe a title shot's in contention for him. Yeah. But if Blades beats Lewis, then potentially Lewis versus Overeem makes sense.
Yeah,
Lewis coming off a loss, Overeem trying to move up in the rankings. I mean, to me, that makes sense. What is that? Is that the fight that you would call for?
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially there's been like beef with Derek Lewis and Alistair Overeem. So to get a fight hyped up like that, I would love to see.
Absolutely, mate. I think that's a decent shout. And as I said, I think we kind of got to wait till that result now. We've got to wait to see what happens with Lewis and Blades first, because that's going to be the fight that determines probably who's going to fight for the heavyweight championship at some point. I know obviously Ngannou's in there as well, but other than that, I think you could argue that the loser of that fight goes to Alistair Overeem. That is our recap of last weekend's event complete, but let's move on to our preview of this weekend's card. And we have an exciting main event this week. And I am not talking about the UFC for once. Tonight, we'll be talking about Bellator 246, Patchy Mix versus Juan Archuleta for the Bantamweight title as our chosen main event. What a fight that is going to be. Now, the UFC, although it does have a main event this week, the main event was actually originally meant to be Thiago Santos versus Glover Teixeira. Now, Teixeira pulled out of that due to contracting coronavirus, so that fight has been rebooked at a later date. So what I'm excited about here is that literally these two guys, Patchy Mix and Juan Archuleta, are beasts. So they are going to step in now as our main event in Bellator. And stepping up in the UFC was Waterson and Hill. But before we talk about that fight, let's talk about the up-and-coming co-main event of the UFC card, in which Ottoman Azatar versus Karma Worthy, they're going to meet in the co-main event. So I am really looking forward to this fight. You have a scary 12-0 guy who's coming off a great KO finish of Teemu Pakalan in his UFC debut last year. And then you have a guy like Karma Worthy, who's causing upsets as the underdog in his fights left, right and centre. In his two UFC fights, Worthy has derailed both Devontae Smith and Luis Peña, both by finishes. He's looking a really seasoned fighter who's up to take absolutely anybody. He will take whatever fight the UFC throw at him, and he's getting the wins. Now, for those who haven't seen it, go back and watch these guys in the UFC. There's three fights to watch. They're all finishes, it will not take long, and you will not regret it. So, Azatar's KO of Pakalan was terrifying. He came in there as an 11-0 guy with a solid 8 knockouts in 11 of those bouts. So it came as no surprise he was able to KO Pakalan, and it was one of those knockouts where you think, is he dead? he falls forward, face plant, and he just went stiff. Now, I'm not sure if that's a Pakalan thing, because he did the exact same against Jacquezi. However, I think it's just that he's coming against these guys who just switch things off like that. Now, interestingly, Azatar made his name as a welterweight fighter, so he's now joined the UFC's lightweight division, and that may explain why he's got that raw power, that raw KO power at 155 pounds. But Worthy is also a guy who loves the finish. He TKO'd Devontae Smith early in his UFC debut, which was really an upset on that night. Everyone thought Smith would get the win. Worthy came in, I think it was in the first minute, and knocked him out. It was a TKO. And then he came up against the Ultimate Fighter's Luis Peña, another fan favourite. Once more, he was able to sink in a choke that forced Luis to tap. Now, watch both of these fights, because he has these moments where the prospects of the sport just go, I fucked up here. Because you can just see that exact moment in the fight that he gets them hurt, or he sinks in the choke, and then it's all downhill from there. I think with Smith, as I said, he knocked him down to the ground. Smith tries to get it back up, and he's able to finish him. And then with Peña, literally, there's an amazing meme. You can look at it where you see he's on Peña's back, he's sinking the choke in, and you literally can see Peña's eyes just, they are wide. You just know that he's not going to get out of that. This fight is a really hard one to call for me.
You
say here we go, mate. I'm going to play it safe. I'm not going to make a call.
Oh, really?
No one can force me. Basically, the reason I'm not going to make a call is because I think it goes one of two ways. I think either Azatar lands a scary shocker of a punch and Karma goes night-night. Or Azatar gets exposed and Karma outgrapples him for a unanimous decision or just any finish, whether that's ground and pound or a choke. This is why I don't want to necessarily call it the exact way that this fight goes, because I will not be shocked either way. But either way, I just think it's going to be a great fight. Between two of the sport's lesser known guys, but whoever the winner of this is, I'm excited to see what the future holds for them, because either way, I'm not sure who necessarily gets the finish, but I'm excited to see how the fight plays out. What's your thoughts?
I think whoever's going to get knocked out, I don't know. Oh, I can't make a call, because then I'll be the one who's making bad decisions.
Yeah, see, week in, week out, I'm chucking myself in the deep end. I'm making myself the bad guy. And then you got you, who's not willing to make a choice. Genuinely, just I get it with fights like this. And funny enough, even with the next fight we're going to talk about, they're such hard fights to call.
Yeah.
Because there's times recently, and I'll hold my hands up to it, where I have wholeheartedly written someone off because I've just thought one person, that they can't lose it. So I will always own up to them, and I'm happy with that. These other fights, though, I said, although I might call it wrong, I wouldn't even mind, because I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be surprised. That is what this sport's all about. But let's move on to our UFC main event. Michelle Waterson versus Angie Hill. Now, first things first, I think two of my favourite female fighters in the sport unfortunately come face to face Saturday night, and I hate to say it, but I can't bloody wait for it. literally, both these two have had some really shitty decisions go against them recently. Yeah. I felt Hill got the better of Gadela a few months back, and then I felt Waterson beat Esparza, in my opinion. So I don't think that the judges appreciate true striking at its finest. Both these two fight with great kickboxing and karate prowess. Their striking is very clean, and they move in and out of range so well. They may not always go for the finish. There is no doubt that they can get a unanimous decision victory by outstriking their opponents throughout the fight. Now, I think we're going to see some top level striking on Saturday night, and I think both women are deserving of being pushed into that top five scene. Mm-hmm. I love what they both stand for. You've got Angie Hill, a fighter game to face anyone at any time. Like, she had two fights in under a month this year, and three fights in the space of 5 months, including camps, etc. That's coming out of a fight and signing straight up for another fight. She just loves getting in there and laying it on someone. That's why I love Angie Hill. But then you've got Michelle Waterson, aiming to become the first mum champ. Now, I'm not sure if that has actually been done yet, but overall, I think she's a great ambassador for the sport, a great figurehead, and I think she's got a very, very bright future pushing the sport into a better place, whether that's as an ambassador or just as a fighter that other fighters look up to.
Yeah.
I think she is great in the sport, and once more, you just can't not like her. Now, I don't want to see either of these two lose. Oh, God. Don't know if I said that right at all. I don't want to see either of these two lose. I love them both so much, but I think we have to look at things with a fine comb here. I'm getting stuck between a rock and a hard place, because for me, Michelle's record says that she should get the victory here and outclass Hill. However, a fighter like Hill is so crisp in her striking and pushes for the victory so well. We've seen Michelle be a bit too lax in the past and just counter-strike. So I think this matches up well, because will Michelle's record prove why she's in there, and will she counter-strike Hill for the victory? Or will Hill be able to use her pressure and clean striking, rack up the volume on Waterson, and then get the judges' nod? I think the judges do struggle against someone like Waterson, who's more known for their counter-striking in the fights. And we've seen the same happen with someone like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson versus Tyron Woodley. There's arguments that people felt that he won the first and second fight. As I said, when you're a counter-striker, when you're someone who has that karate stance, and you keep your distance a lot, you use side kicks a lot, and then you kind of just, you don't necessarily piece together massive combinations, you just do 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. I think the judges struggle to count it as significant, but I think they still need to. Michelle looked fantastic in her last fight, I thought she beat Esparza. I know Esparza got a couple of takedowns, but overall for me, Michelle was the one who was effectively landing striking better. And it doesn't mean that it's significant. It doesn't mean they're landing clean. But when she wanted to land, she was landing. She was being... It was a spot. She was leading the dance, in my opinion. And I think the fighters need to take that into consideration more. The only thing that will absolutely crack me up is if this fight goes to a draw. Can you imagine? Both were screwed by the judges in their last fight, and then this time around, they're just mocked by them. I mean, I'm not sure, as I said once more, I'm not sure the way this fight goes down. I'm probably going to put my money near... actually, I'm going to turn this on my head this time. I'm going to go for Hill. I think...
I'm going to go for Michelle. Oh, bloody hell.
If I get something wrong... see, guys, I was saying this to Sean earlier, as I was speaking on the phone. I was saying that I try, although I've made some awful decisions recently, I'm always going to go with what my heart says. This is the fight where I'm not going to go with what my heart says. I'm going to go with what my head says. And if I get this wrong this time, then I can't call for a second retirement, can I? we're just going to have to see. I'm going to go for Angela Hill. I think she's going to get the pressure on Michelle, and I think she's going to push for the victory. But once more, if Michelle gets the win, I'll tip my hat to you, Sean. I wouldn't mind that at all either. But
it's a five rounds. Main event is five rounds, isn't it?
Yeah. I will have to get back to you on that because, as I said, Thiago Santos and Teixeira was due to be the main event. So there's a potential that this fight will only be three rounds because obviously they've been preparing for a co-main. It wouldn't surprise me if the UFC give them three rounds instead of five. I do not know yet. Any fans out there, if they can give us the answer, please do. Well, before we sign off for today, I want to talk about our chosen main event of the evening. It's a first. A bout in Bellator MMA. A bantamweight title fight between two beasts with a combined record of 37-2. Patchy Mix versus Juan Archuleta. You heard that right. 37-2. I absolutely bloody love this fight. I mean, Mix has an undefeated pro record of 13-0. And he looks like one of the best grapplers I have seen. And then we have a guy like Archuleta, a veteran in Bellator and the featherweight division. 24-2. That is insane. So I also want to note that both these guys started their career at the same time, in 2013/2014. The reason I say 2014 is Mix was originally due to fight in 2013 and the fight got cancelled. So he made his debut in 2014. But I love that. I mean, they started their career basically 7 years ago. One's got a 13-0 record, one's got a 24-2 record. Don't be fooled. They are both veterans and they are heavily experienced. And don't be fooled again. I may have just shone on the fact that Mix's record in 7 years is 13-0, but Mix's amateur career also went 11-0. So in MMA, he is 24-0 combined. And then, as I said, Juan Archuleta doesn't actually have any record of his amateur career yet. So Mix has never tasted defeat. Now, although Archuleta has, he faced it once earlier in his career at 5-0. But then, recently, a few fights ago, he lost to the 30-4 Patricio Pitbull, the current champion. That's what I love about this fight. They are both incredibly tested fighters at the top level, and they're going to offer an incredible fight. For me, will Mix be able to utilise his superior grappling game and ride Juan out for the whole fight? But then we've also seen Juan dominate people before, when he handed Ricky Madeas his second career defeat. What I love here is this fight, once more, is incredibly hard to call. Both are so talented. Juan established his name more at the top level in Bellator, but Mix has also fought some of Bellator's top contenders. Once more, Ricky Madeas, he choked him out, I think, in the first round. I think that Juan potentially hands Patchy his first career loss on Saturday night. That's going to be my shout. I just see 25-2 up on that board and Juan getting the belt around him. However, if Mix does win, surely he starts putting his name out there as one of the world's best bantamweight fighters. Not only because he's fighting one of the best promotions, but because of his record. His record would match that of Peter Yan's. I believe Peter's 15-1. And as I said, Patchy will go 14-0. That is terrifying. I genuinely think that either way, Archuleta or Mix here pull off wonders. What a great talking point too is the winner of this is likely going to face Sergio Pettis next. What a fight that will be. An experienced and well-known veteran, a guy who's been in the UFC, obviously trains with Anthony, trains with Tyron Woodley, facing either an undefeated guy who's got double figures or a guy who's only lost twice in 27 bouts. I am so bloody excited for this fight. Thank you, Bellator, and thank you, Scott Coker. I mean, what would your prediction be for this?
Archuleta, I'm going to go for you. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
I think for me, Archuleta probably rides out a decision. I don't see this fight being finished. I will be shocked if it does. If it does, fair enough. I think Archuleta lost by submission earlier on in his career, so potentially Patchy can submit him. But I think this fight goes to the decision. I don't know if it's a 5-round. I think it might only be 3, but I could be wrong there. As I said, I think over 3 rounds, I think Archuleta gets a win. But if anyone's going to pull off a surprise, it's going to be Patchy Mix. And I'm not even sure if that will be a surprise, because 13-0, a guy who's established himself, I think, 3 or 4 fights in Bellator now. He's looking a killer. As I said, his amateur record puts him up to about 24-0. So, man, I cannot wait to see this guy. I can't wait to see other guys face off. And whoever wins, I think they're going to be very, very solid contenders in that division. Yeah. I think they'll hold the title for a while. I think both of them potentially beat Pettis. So, I cannot wait for the fight. But now that that's out of my system, before we sign off for the day, we'll shine on a few exciting fight announcements. Now, there's only 2 things I want to talk about here. First thing, the situation with Khamzat Chimaev. Have you heard what's going on?
It's crazy, isn't it? He wants to fight anyone. He wants to fight Nate Diaz, Nick Diaz, Damian Maia. He hasn't even fought his... Oh, who was he? Sorry,
but... Gerard Meerschaert.
Yeah, he hasn't even fought him yet. Well, he's a tough opponent.
He really is a tough opponent, I think, for him. So, it's a really strange situation. You've got... He was announced against Gerard Meerschaert in a few weeks that them two are due to be fighting. But then Dana White says in a press conference that they're also eyeing up him versus Maia. So there's talk about him fighting both, because I was looking at Twitter going, hold on, I thought he's fighting him instead. So it seems that they are kind of preempting that he's going to win against Meerschaert and that then he gets Maia next. And that's a very, very bold move. Now, I think now in yesterday, so this news came about 2 or 3 days ago, but I think yesterday Dana ended up saying if he puts his money on a guy who's going to do like 2 fights in 10 days, etc., if he's going to put his money on a guy who can book into 2 fights, it's going to be Chimaev. So I do get that he's kind of tried to defend that by not, they're not trying to say, he's definitely going to beat Meerschaert. They're not trying to play Meerschaert as the underdog. They're just kind of saying that even. They think that Chimaev is capable of doing 2 fights in a short period of time. So I kind of get their response to it, but I do think it's a bit disrespectful to Meerschaert. And as you said, I think it's a tough fight. Meerschaert's grappling is very good. Very, very good. He's ridiculously experienced. I think, 31, 32, and 8 or something like that? He might have had more losses than that. But overall, Meerschaert's a very experienced veteran of the sport. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Chimaev goes in there, takes him down, and then just grinds the victory out. Maybe first round TKO. But you cannot write someone like Meerschaert off. I think one interesting thing I've also seen out there, and I think I agree. Some people have said that Meerschaert's a harder fight for Chimaev than Maia is. And I think I might actually agree. Damian Maia, obviously his submission skills and his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is terrifying. But Maia is getting older now. And Maia's not really been able to put in them performances anymore, especially with his striking. He's not been able to put on them performances where you're shocked. And Chimaev could definitely do it against him. Chimaev could keep his distance and knock him out, for sure. But, as I said, someone like Meerschaert, who's coming off some decent wins, I think Meerschaert might be actually coming off loss now, but overall, Meerschaert's being a lot more active than Maia is. I think it's a hard fight for Chimaev, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Mm-hmm. But, moving on from that, the bigger thing I want to talk about, holy fuck, UFC 254. So it appears that Khabib leaked this last week. I am not sure if it is entirely true yet. There's been, I know Dana's spoken about some of these bouts and saying, yes, we are looking at booking them. They have not confirmed a date for them, though. However, Khabib released a graphic that showed the main event, Khabib versus Gaethje, to unify the title. The co-main event, Tony Ferguson versus Dustin Poirier. Following that, you'll have Zabit versus Yair Rodriguez. Following that, you'll have Whittaker versus Cannoneer. And then you'll have Makachev versus Rafael Dos Anjos. That will be the card of the century. If that's true, that's going to be so hard to beat. To have someone like Whittaker and Cannoneer as the fourth fight there, that shows how incredible that card is. But as I said, none of that is actually official yet. If that is the card they make, I will be very surprised, because I think there's some fights in there like Zabit versus Yair. That's arguably a main event on a fight night. Whittaker Cannoneer is probably a main event on a pay-per-view card, or a co-main event on a pay-per-view card. Ferguson Poirier once more. The UFC, about, what, 6 times a year, pull off one of these pay-per-view cards where even if you've got BT Sport, you have to pay as well. One of the cards where they have like 2 or 3 title fights on the night and then some bigger bouts. This might be another one of those nights, but I'd be very surprised if every one of them fights makes it on there, because, God, if you give me that as a card, wow.
I've been mad, but I actually have heard just before the podcast that they are actually trying to book Poirier versus Ferguson for that fight.
For that night, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow, so as I said, if that's the news that's circulating on Twitter now, that's really good to hear, because I know that it was tipped as the co-main, etc. But there was just nothing confirmed. I think that's what Dana had said a few days ago, is that they are looking at booking Ferguson versus Poirier, but they haven't confirmed it yet. And they haven't confirmed the date. They haven't even signed anything. But literally, like, what a fight that will be. As a co-main event, that's just ridiculous. Khabib Gaethje obviously is crazy, but then to have, like, basically the top 4 lightweights in the world facing off in the space of 2 fights. I mean, Dana, take all my money. Do it. That's just incredible. And then, as I said, I would be surprised if Zabit versus Yair is higher than Whittaker versus Cannoneer, because arguably Whittaker Cannoneer is next for the title.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see. And even someone like RDA versus Islam Makhachev as the fifth fight, the opening fight for the main card. Once more, I want to see that. I want to see where what those guys have to offer in the fight. And that's a former champ there. That would be incredible. But as I said, there is no official confirmation there yet. But if that happens, we are in for an incredible night of fighting and a podcast that's going to go on for about 6 hours. Because we're going to have to break down every single fight. Guys, that is all we have time for now. Thank you so much for tuning into the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to us. And be sure to tune in next week, where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card, which takes place on the 19th of September. Bad blood is going to be settled as Colby Covington and Tyrone Woodley face off. I love that fight as well. I'm looking forward to breaking that down with you, mate. But what can we say about that? That's going to be chaos. Literally, it goes with his name, Chaos Covington. Tyrone Woodley. Tyrone said that he's going to throw his hands. Mate, I'm holding him to that. Because if he doesn't, I think Tyrone's in a really bad place. But as I said, when Tyrone lets his hands go, Jesus. If Usman KOs Colby, I think Tyrone does that clean. So yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I've been your host, Jake Jones. And I want to say a massive thank you to our co-host this week, Sean Gilly, for returning and making it a great show as always. Thank you, matey.
I love it, man.
Well, be sure to let us know any feedback you have for the podcast, and let us know which guests you'd like me, Sean, and Liam to speak to over the next few weeks. Thank you guys very much, and take care.